everybody. Welcome to EduMatch. Thank you so much for joining us. So I'm excited about tonight's episode. We're going to be talking game-based learning, and we have an awesome crew here to chat about it with us. So we're going to start things off with some panel introductions. So in about 30 seconds, would you mind introducing yourself? Let's start first with Glenn.
Hello, everyone. My name is Glenn Irvin. I am a former Spanish teacher, now a technology integration as an instructional coach in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. I have used, as far as game-based learning is concerned, a really big fan of Minecraft, used that in my Spanish classrooms, and then we'll probably have some more discussion about those kinds of things.
Wonderful. Well, welcome back, Glenn. Great to have you here. All right. And next up, we have Stuart.
Hi, I'm Stuart Claggett. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Digit Games. We primarily make game-based learning products, focusing primarily on social studies products. And I've only actually been involved with this for the past 3 years. Software's been my background prior to this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to Tweet and Talk. All right, next up we have Amy.
Oh, so I'm Dr. Amy Hager, and I am an English teacher at an alternative school. And my game-based learning experience is a little different from other people. I work with children with extreme emotional disturbance and behavior needs, and we use kind of the old school games, card games, board games, to teach social skills.
That is really interesting. So can't wait to hear more about that and to dive into that. So welcome to Tweet and Talk. All right. And last but not least, we have our moderator, Matthew.
Hi, I'm Matt Farber. I'm a former social studies teacher. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Northern Colorado currently. I teach in the Technology, Innovation, and Pedagogy program here. I teach teachers, basically, teacher education. I have a background, of course, in game-based learning and educational technology. I wrote two books on game-based learning, Gamify Your Classroom, which is in the second edition. Game-Based Learning in Action is the current book. Co-authored a UNESCO paper on the limitations and strengths of using digital games as, quote, empathy machines. And that's basically it for now. I'm very excited to hear about the use of board games and card games in the classroom, by the way. That's one of my favorite teaching tools.
Sweet. That is awesome. So welcome. Glad to have you here. So go ahead and take it away for us with our first question.
Sure thing. So, I mean, I have some familiarity with the panelists, so I kind of like cherry pick the questions here. So I'm going to start off with a few myth busters, because these are some things I've been thinking about lately as far as why we use games, kind of going back to, I always assume that everybody just knows, starts with why, from Simon Sinek, you know, like, why are we doing this, not what are we doing, right? So these actually pertain to why with game-based learning. So why are we teaching with games?
The generic answer is that it is very engaging, but it's much more complex than that. I would say that why are we teaching with games? Because there's a lot that we can do to be able to connect it to any kind of curriculum, any grade level, and make it a compelling way to go ahead and learn.
Yeah, I just wanted to build off of that a little bit. And it's kind of what I was thinking about with the question is this like tyranny of engagement that when I speak to some teachers when they use games in the classroom, they think or they may say to me, this is anecdotal, that, you know, it's a constant feedback or the idea that you have that feedback all the time. And it's like, boom, 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 like nonstop engagement. But we know from flow theory, that engagement does not necessarily mean you're constantly bombarded with, like, you know, action. Even in some of the better video games like Stardew Valley, which is a game of gardening, or actual gardening, or yoga, right? Or yoga, or cooking, ironing for some, dog walking. Those are flow activities, and those are pretty engaging, actually, for some people to just stop and think. And we all do it differently. So yeah, I think there's this sort of a trapping of engagement, like we use games because it's engaging. I don't know if I fully buy into that. So I do agree. I would like snap along, right? So we do to agree with your answer there.
Actually, with board games, it's almost like the opposite for us. What we're noticing is that, like, you know, I'm that older millennial where like I know how to use an iPhone, but I also like knew how to like tape songs off the radio. And so many things that we learned about how to like wait our turn. Like we used to have to wait to whatever was on the radio. Like you had to wait for that hot 9 at 9 to hear the song you wanted to hear. Or if you wanted to watch a TV show, you better wait for it to come on Thursday. And if you miss it, I don't know what to tell you. All those things kind of taught us how to just wait our turn, be patient. Even video games. Like if you were at a friend's house and you were playing Luigi, like you better just wait. And you had to wait until the other person was finished. And you had to sit there if you lost and wait for the game to start back up again. And kids are not getting that practice anymore because the games just they finish and they're on to the next one. Kids are playing for these games hours and hours. And just that instant feedback, when it translates into the classroom, it's a lot of she won't help me. As soon as the hand goes up, they need a teacher to come over and just give them that immediate feedback. They want to rush through their work because they're just so used to being able to finish and go to the next thing instead of kind of taking their time with things. And so to see some children that are a little rambunctious, like sitting and learning how to play Gin Rummy, is just where they just kind of have to wait, or Uno, like if they're finished and they're out, like they have to wait for the next round. So I think it's kind of like a catch-22. We want to engage them, but at the same time, like, we need to make sure that they're having those like turn-taking skills and that patience, because they are becoming explosive in classes at some times.
Sure. Well, this goes back to Vygotsky, right? With self-regulation and social games in particular. So I think some of those are the most terrific things to use in a classroom. Even digital games, having students play in pairs because they're together in the classroom.
I guess the only thing I would add to that is I think that games, you know, digital games or card games provide another opportunity with game-based learning for educators perhaps to get a student learning where they can't actually learn in the traditional environment. We've seen lots of examples where a student actually sat down with our game, but they were not learning the content through traditional methods. But as soon as they sat down with the game, and this individual was actually an autistic individual, and they excelled as soon as they got into the game. They were sort of in their environment and just sort of exploded with knowledge and picking up on skills that they couldn't demonstrate to the teacher in another way.
You are listening to EduMatch.
Hello, my name is Mandy Freilich, and my book, The Fire Within, is currently available on Amazon. The Fire Within is a book of stories by educators who have gone through personal and professional adversities and who have come through stronger on the other side. They use their superpowers that they gained with their students in order to be better educators. If this sounds like stories of superheroes, you are absolutely right. There's also a chapter on trauma and how it affects the brain, and a chapter covering post-traumatic growth and secondary traumatic stress and how it affects educators in their job. So if you are interested in The Fire Within, you can find it right now on Amazon by searching The Fire Within, Lessons from Defeat That Have Ignited a Passion for Learning. Thank you.
Now back to more learning on the Edge of Match podcast.
So my next question has to do with the, some of my research recently and work has been looking into something called constructionist gaming. So it is constructionism, where students, or learners, I should say in general, learn by creating a digital or physical tangible artifact. So they're learning by making something that's personally meaningful to them, which is based on the work of Seymour Papert at MIT and constructionism. So it's a little different than constructivism. If you're not familiar, constructionism has to do with creating some artifact that's personally meaningful. And Seymour Papert worked or studied originally under Jean Piaget. And his work, he passed away like 2 years ago. His work is carried on at MIT by Mitch Resnick and the team at Lifelong Kindergarten, who run Scratch. And constructionist gaming is really that intersection of playing and making, right? So we see that right up front on Minecraft, because you've got your survival and creative mode. And then I've also seen that, of course, with Scratch, because, you know, you create, remix, and share, right? And to me, that is really getting beyond the point of the game as this silver bullet learning machine or teaching machine, where we expect the game to do everything, to teach, assess, and give feedback and everything all at once. But that's still, you know, most people know that's not true, but, you know, we still get a lot of that, right? And to go even beyond reflections, where students are creating these artifacts. I've also observed this with teachers who use tools like outside tools like Twine to create interactive fiction stories after students play a game. It's almost like taking reading a story and then writing a fan fiction story about it. With card games like Uno, for example, as you mentioned, Amy, having students play the game Uno and then maybe make their own version of it, either themed on content or just a remix of it, right? And that's really what constructionist gaming is. So I was wondering if the panel could comment on the promises of constructionist gaming, which is, there's a really good book on that as well, I should say, by Yasmin Kafai and I believe his name is Quinn Burke, called Connected Gaming from MIT Press.
I was thinking about, even in the previous question, Paul Darbassi is writing a series on Dungeons and Dragons and the power of that inside of a classroom and the way that you can use that to basically go ahead and develop these amazing storylines, have creativity, still have this cooperative and collaborative community that you would have in a non-digital format. So I was thinking that it's very similar to you, where you'd be able to use it in a English language arts course, or even at the middle school level or elementary level, as you develop these storylines to be able to go ahead and play together, just completely out of someone's imagination, instead of it being kind of this is driven towards a specific goal. The goals are developed then by the students themselves.
Any other comments or use cases, case study examples, or just personal use of constructionist gaming where students play and then make, where the game-based learning actually becomes an inspiration for project-based learning in effect? Or production center classrooms?
I have noticed when, it's not like the high tech games, but when we played board games and then they've been given the opportunity to make a board game about a story or something that we've read, I notice they start with the questions, and they're usually very simple questions. And then they start to understand like, no, to make this game hard, you need to have more complex questions. So I'm interested to see like how they begin to challenge themselves. Like they know what that caliber is supposed to be like, if it's going to be a fun game. Fun games are hard. They're not easy to win. So I'm interested to see how they start to see the patterns and just, you know, apply them to their task. So that's interesting.
That is interesting. I spoke for another article I'm writing for a blog post to Matt Leacock, who's the designer of Pandemic and Forbidden Island and many different really hard cooperative games. Many have won awards, very popular games. They're also really difficult to play. And he said that was on purpose because the role playing is not as meaningful unless the game is super hard, is actually what he said. because when the game is super hard, suddenly you have this superpower that nobody else has. So I thought that was quite interesting. How have you used roles to create students as superheroes in the classroom?
I was thinking about when we used Minecraft as far as in the classroom, one of the most powerful uses of Minecraft actually had to do with role-playing. We gave us students the options of being a variety of different roles to be able to have this commerce system where students basically pretended to be specific characters and specific professions inside of the game, which gave them ownership as far as their character, and then also part of this community that we were building. So it was a really cool way of using the roles to make it more realistic, if we want to say that, but also to give them a compelling reason to go ahead and want to succeed.
You are listening to EduMatch.
If you wanna be somebody, If you wanna go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention. It's either now or never to make your dreams come true. You better wake up and pay attention. Hey, everybody, it's Dean from Orlando, Florida, coming to you on Monday, April 2nd, 2018. And I am very excited because today is the official release date of my first solo book titled The Why in You. Journey to the Why in You. I'm very excited that this is available on Amazon in Kindle versions and in paperback. There's your back cover right there. I am so excited because when I think about my journey as an educator, it didn't start yesterday. It started even from an early age. And so this book contains anecdotes, stories about the why in me. And so as you read it, as you pick it up, and I encourage you to do so, I challenge you to consider the why in you, the obstacles, right? That were not always positive. They were not always easy. The journey's never easy, but it is worth it. And there is something positive in every negative if you can just see it. I really do believe that. There is something positive in every obstacle that if you could just see it, it will help you to continue going on that journey as an educator, as an administrator, as a teacher. And so we have a job to do. And so that journey is so important to be embraced. And thank you in advance for checking it out on Amazon. Again, it's The Why in You. You can even type my name in on Amazon. It should pop it right up. You can also go to deanganey.com and find it there. You can click directly on the link and it'll take you to Amazon. Again, thanks in advance for checking it out and have a great day, as well as identify the why in you.
Now back to more learning on the Edge of Match podcast.
How can games support social emotional learning skills like empathy and compassion?
I'll hop in. Okay. Particularly when you've got like different either social emotional levels or even grades in alternative schools, sometimes we end up, it's kind of like a schoolhouse, you know, because of our smaller numbers. But it's interesting to see the kids kind of slow down and want to help each other with the game. And particularly if they are enemies otherwise, they want to help each other win the game. You know, they know that if they work, they kind of know, like, if we work together, we can have this 5 minutes a day to play with this game. Another thing with that social emotional development, I've worked with girls who have, you know, been abused, you know, sexually and things like that. And, you know, when that 10, 11 year old, when that happens, something, you know, warps and twists in your head in regards to how you're supposed to interact with, you know, a male-female relationship. And I've seen where just a game of Go Fish can turn where you have a girl who thought that she needed to always be pretty and cute for a man, now just has this platonic relationship that you can just have, you can just play a game. It doesn't have to be where you're flirting or doing anything for him. It's just an exchange of a leisure activity. And then I've seen her kind of take that and generalize it out into other activities, whether we're doing group work or just sitting next to a classmate. It doesn't have to be anything inappropriate. And because it's not a teacher structured thing, and just trying to sit back and watch that dynamic is helpful.
Thank you.
I was using gamification with my students. So I know that there's like a difference, but I would say that the collaboration was definitely ramped up through that, and that everyone was kind of responsible for one another in different ways. So I feel like that really helped to establish some of the soft skills in the classroom that, you know, we traditionally don't grade or, you know, directly teach, you know, but we want to increase these soft skills to foster this sense of humanity. So, you know, definitely cultivate what our students already bring to the table and help them to grow that capacity in themselves.
So I see this comment on the side here about younger students and getting younger students involved in constructionist gaming. So, you know, we actually see that already with Minecraft, because Minecraft gets more and more, complex the older you get, right? You know, younger children can build and create mini games and those sorts of things, where older children can get much more advanced with the tool set that Minecraft provides. But there are a lot of different games that have level editors. But I would say just naturally, if you watch children, they're making games. That's just what the work of childhood, right? So, you know, bringing students and keeping that going rather than saying, well, here's this game. And the game often may teach much better than traditional methods. But what would happen next, right? So it's always that, it's really about transfer of learning, right? How do you know the student's not learning the game? And that's it, right? Or students don't always, kids or anybody really, they don't always reflect on the processes of the game. So the game is assessing you as you go. If it's the group dynamic playing a card game, or if it's a very complex video game, you're being assessed as you go. However, you know, it's the teacher's role to have those areas of reflection and then perhaps to get the students making and creating. You know, design thinking, systems thinking. And it brings a lot of the four, well, it brings, I would say, all the four C's together of collaboration, critical thinking, creativity, and I always forget the fourth C no matter what. I need a reminder.
I don't even remember myself. You said creativity. Did you say collaboration?
Yeah, I think creativity, collaboration, critical thinking. I don't want to Google it.
I got nothing.
Actually, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about DeGeek Games. So that'll be a question for Stuart.
Okay. Well,
what you guys are up to, you know.
What we're up to these days.
Yeah,
so sure. our biggest project last year, and there's been some continuous updates on that, was our Excavate project. And that we created 6 world cultures for world history for middle school, and took it through the lens of an archaeologist, which our founder is an archaeologist, and she was a middle school teacher, and she's always been trying to find ways to bring archaeology into the classroom as part of a science, but also blending that obviously with the results of archaeology. So Excavate has been sort of our biggest project that we did last year. We've been actually working on a casual entertainment game recently that's going to be released. But last year, we also concluded research that we did with the National Science Foundation on creating a new global standard for reporting using Experience API. Mm-hmm. And the idea here was to try and get the industry as a whole, and this is something we saw from our interviews, both with administrators, educators, and the industry itself, that some standardization would be helpful. Dr. Owens had done some of this and trying to look at it with the Ad Age project and applying that into the Glabs portal. We decided that Experience API, which is being used by the e-learning industry, was the perfect match for the industry. Because it would be transparent, and with the way we approached it for the standard, it would be interoperable. So if everybody could sort of use this, it would help with reporting and help the industry as a whole with respect to scale for game-based learning. So that was probably one of our biggest projects. And we most recently made that open source, that research, as a community called GBLX API.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the promises, I guess, of digital game-based learning is the scalability of it, right? That's quite interesting. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you so much for a great conversation. Definitely wanted to thank our fantastic panelists. So, Amy, Stewart, Glenn, and Glenn, it was great to see you too. And Matthew, this was an amazing dialogue. So thank you for that. Thank you to everybody who is tweeting with us, as well as everyone who is watching with us and tuning in. So Tanika, thank you for that last C, communication. That's the one that we missed. So awesomeness. So we're going to be taking a short break. You know, it is conference season, so we will be back for our next episode on October the 7th. So that is Sunday, October 7th. We're going to be talking about sketchnoting. So tune in if you can. If you want to be on panel, then you can also do that. We welcome everyone who has something to share about the topic. So you can sign up at podcast with an s.edumatch.org/signup. and that will get you that'll get you on as a panelist. So looking forward to seeing everybody next time, and thank you again for everything. All right, have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
You're at Edge Match. Edge Match. Don't miss Edge Match.